And we're holding on Samach Ahmed Bey's the second to last line of the wide lines.
Tamer Hamoud Bey.
Samach Ahmed Bey's, yeah. Second to last of the wide lines on Manasseh Chathamach. So the Mishnah had described various cases where a man is Makadish a woman and says that first there was Al Tanai that I give you 200 zuz, Al Manas rather that I give you 200 zuz, and we talked about she's Makudeshes and he has to give the money, and we had a Machloikas Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, when does the Kiddushin take effect, retroactively or only when he gives her the money. So now the Mishnah had said that if he said that Amnas, I give you the money within 30 days, then if he gives it to her within 30 days, then she's Mekudeshes, and if not, then not. So the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that obvious? He said 30 days, he didn't do it within 30 days. What's the Chiddush? And the answer is, you could say that maybe the 30 days is not really so much. Is not really so much part of the Tanai. Ulzaruzi Ka'omar, he's really only saying it, or she's really putting him up to it. Rashi explains, only to encourage him to do it. In other words, it's not that he voluntarily said 30 days. He said, I'm the Kaddish you, I'm an ass that I'll give you 200 zuz. And she said, or before, but while they're still talking about it, while they're doing what we called earlier in the Masech, the Shiduchim, where they're talking about that I want to be the Kaddish you, and let's figure out the terms. So she says, don't just say that I'm going to give you 200 zuz, then I might be stuck in limbo for a long time until you get around to doing it. Rather, say that you're going to do it within 30 days. And but maybe she's not saying it that really she must have it within 30 days. She's just telling him so that he doesn't end up stalling. So you would think, therefore, that if he does give it after the 30 days, fine, at least she got her 200 zuz, maybe it doesn't matter so much, kamash malon, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that no, it does actually make a difference, and the fact is the Kiddushin are not going to be valid unless he actually gives it to her within the 30 days. Okay, then the Mishnah had said, I'm not Shiyashli Masayim.
Where do we take this 30 days from? Why just 30 days? Why not 29 or 64?
Because that's what he said, 30 days. If he had said 29 days, it would have been 29. But you find, for example, 30 days comes up in other areas of monetary halacha. For example, a person borrows money and you don't specify an amount of time till he has to pay back, then the general assumption is 30 days. So, but whatever, obviously if she had said 24 days and 10 hours, then that's what it would be, you know, whatever. Then the Mishnah said, I'm not Shiyashli Masayim Zuz V'chola, that if he says, I'm being Makadosh you on condition that I have 200 Zuz, then she's Mekudeshes, and if he doesn't have 200 Zuz, then she's not. So the Gemara asks, V'necho Shemi Yeshloi, shouldn't we have to be concerned that he does in fact have 200 zuz and that she is Mekudeshes? How can we say as a blanket statement, if he doesn't have, she's not Mekudesh? What if he does have it and he's hiding it or something? And after all, the Ramban points out, when he says to begin with, I'm Mekadesh you, I'm Anas, that I have 200 zuz, we have good reason to assume he really does have 200 zuz. Otherwise, why would he have said such a thing? So now, maybe even if he says he doesn't have, after all, maybe we shouldn't believe him. Or what about if he has money that's hidden away, etc.? So the one answer is, you're right. We don't mean that she's not Mekudeshes at all if he doesn't have. And in fact, we learn in a braisa that we choshish that he might have. And the answer is, like Kasha, if he has 200 zuz, then the Kiddushin are definitely good. If not, then yes, that's true. You do have that consideration. And therefore, there's Kiddushi Safit, and the result would be, as with other Kiddushi Safik, if she accepts Kiddushin from somebody else, then you'll have a Safik which one she's Mekudeshes to, and then she'd need a get from the other guy before he can marry her, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continued, Amanas She'arich Mosayim Zuz V'chola. If he says, on condition that I show you 200 Zuz, then Mekudeshes said he has to show her. But the Mishnah had said, if he shows her the money just on the table, he's a money changer and he has money on his table, then not. So at Tonu, we learn in a Braisa, Loinis Skavna, Eloludis Mishaloi, because when she says that, when he says, I'm going to show you 200 Zuz, and that was the Tanai he made, means she meant only when she put him up to making such a Tanai, was she expected to see money of his own, not money of somebody else that he's handling. And the Mishnah had said, and therefore, if he shows her on the table, she's not Mekudeshes. So the question is, Pshita. Well, that's obvious. Once we establish that point, then there's no reason to think that showing her the money on the table would be good. Now, Pnei Yeshua, by the way, points out, it's one thing if he just said, I'm Manas that I have 200 zuz. So he doesn't have to show it to her, but the point is that if we find that he has 200 zuz, we're going to assume by default that that money is his. Because generally, what a person has in his possession, we have a chazaka, is usually his. I'm saying he was Makadisha with a Shavuot Prota. I'm Manas that he has 200 zuz. So, but here we're talking about, he said, I'm going to show you, and that means he has to show her, he has to demonstrate to her that he owns 200 zuz, and therefore if it's on the table, any Makudeshes, so the Gemara says Pshita. Now, there are actually Meforshim who discuss whether the Gemara's question Pshita is really on the Mishnah, because after all, the Mishnah had not made that point that she intends to see money that belongs to him. Maybe the question is really more on the Braisa. Why is the Braisa, once the Braisa has established, then why does the Braisa continue with saying, and if he shows her on the table, any Mekudeshes, then obviously it's not Mishaloi. Anyway, the answer is Loit Sricha, yes, but the Chiddush of the Mishnah or the Braisa is, even though he has the money, it's not that he's a money changer and the money doesn't belong to him at all. What if he has an iska? What if he has a partnership with somebody where somebody else gives him money to invest? And the rule is, what happens? So then what happens is they eventually split the profits between them. The Gemara in Bava Metzia in Ezu Neshech in particular deals at great length with the dinim of how you set up such an iska, because on the face of it, you're going to have a problem of ribis. The whole concept of a heter iska nowadays is based on this idea. The Gemara establishes over there. So if Reuven invests money with Shimon, and now Shimon is going to be the managing partner, he's going to be the one running the business. So the deal is, the money is considered half milva, half pikadon. The Chachamim set it up. It's half the money is considered like a loan, half of it is considered like a deposit. So that way, and then there's reasons why the Chachamim set it up that way, but the point is, then now if you just give the other guy half of his, half of the proceeds, the problem is you have a problem of ribis, because in effect, what you're doing is, you're paying him extra for the fact that he lent you money. So therefore, so you have different details that have to be set up, and eventually in the times of the Rishonim, a whole concept called the Heter Iska was drawn up, which is done nowadays. For example, Jewish-owned banks and other such things use it, where essentially what you're doing is, it's not, in general, when you borrow money, then for such things, you're not doing it as a loan, you're doing it as a partnership. And then you have different things. You have the managing partner is paid a certain nominal amount as a salary, and they have a deal. What happens if there are losses? How they're balanced out? What happens if there's gains? Then the managing partner gets a certain percentage of the gains and a certain percentage of the losses. Whatever, it's complicated. But anyway, the point is, so here there's an iska, let's say. So now, in a certain sense, he owns some of the money of the iska, because that's how it works. Nevertheless, the point is, the money has to completely belong to him. And in fact, the Ran makes the point, even if, so let's say, for example, the Iska has now made a profit of 400 zuz, so half of it is going to go to him, so therefore he has 200 zuz, but the fact is he hasn't cashed it out yet, and he doesn't have the ability to do that unilaterally. As long as the deal for the Iska is still in effect, he can't just go and cash out. He has to continue running the business and reinvesting the money. And at the end, when they decide to dissolve the business, or when they decide after a certain amount of time, then they'll split the proceeds. But right now, he doesn't have the ability to do that.
So right now, he doesn't have the money.
So therefore, in effect, right now, he doesn't have the money. Right. It would be the equivalent, in other words, of, you know, you have money, let's say right now, that's tied up in a business. So that's exactly what it is. Money that's tied up in a business, and it's not his. So that's the chiddush of the Mishnah or of the Braisa, that it still doesn't count as his 200 zuz, even though eventually it will be his. But right now, it's not yet.
If she got a chavruta.
No, so that's the point, in other words. So therefore, if he says, I'm a nascha arich masayim zuz, and it turns out the only 200 zuz he has is tied up in this iska, then ain't a mekudeshes, we're saying. So she, or at best, mekudeshes me suffer.
Right.
So she won't be mekudesh, because she can't be mekudesh vadai, because we don't see that he has 200 zuz, unless, so therefore, it'll be kedushi suffix, because maybe he has 200 zuz someplace else, like we said before. Okay. Mishnah continues with more cases of Tnoyim and how we see whether the Tnai has been fulfilled. He says, I'm the Kaddish, you, I'm a Nas Sheyeshli base core offer on condition that I own a base core of land. Offer literally means dust, but it means, in other words, land that you can plant in. A base core is the area in which you could plant a core of grain. A core is 30 saw. A base saw is 50 by 50 amos. So a base core is 30 times that. It would be an area of 75,000 square amos.
Sounded a pretty decent.
It's a pretty decent plot of, well, it, to put it in modern terms, so if it were a square, Rashi makes the calculation over here and comes out that it would be a square 273 amos and change by 273 and change. 273 amos, according to the Avram Chaim Noah, is somewhere around 400 feet. So yeah, it's a respectable size plot of land. It would be the equivalent maybe of like one or one and a half Crown Heights size blocks, let's say, square blocks. So respectable, yeah, it's a respectable amount of land. It's interesting, by the way, you know, here you have an example of how grateful we can be to the Eibishter. We have calculators and other such things. Marsha spends an enormous amount of space over here making the calculation. How do we know that a base core amounts to that 273 point whatever by 273 point whatever? Because you have to take they didn't have the concept of square roots then. They didn't have calculators. They didn't have anything like that. So you have to go and you have to break up the 75,000 square amos. You have to make a square out of part of it and then take strips of the rest of it and put it around it and do a whole geometrical problem. And here we can just whip out a calculator and do the cheshbon. Anyway, the point is, so he says, I'm a Nas that I have a base core of land. I'm a Nas that I have a base core of land.
That wasn't
built in those days. Right. So how does he Mekodesh? So she's Mekodesh, provided that he actually owns a base core. Again, if he says, like in the previous Mishnah, I'm a Nas, and the Gemara is going to explain why we need to be saying the same thing when it comes to money and when it comes to Kauka, what's the Chiddush? So we'll see that in a minute. I'm a Nas Sheyeshli B'makom Ploini, if he says, I'm a Nas that I own land in a certain place, then it depends. If he has land in that place, and if not, then not. Even though he does own a base court of land, but because it's not in the place that he said, therefore it's not. We're going to see in the Gemara why that is. Why would she care whether he owns the land here or there? And another case, Amanas Sha'arich base court offer. Again, if he says, it's Amanas that I'm going to show you a base that I own a base court of land, then she's Mekodesh as long as he can show her it. If he shows her in a valley where there's a lot of fields over there, but none of them actually belong to him, and she's not Mekodesh, because she didn't mean, I want to see a base court of land. She meant, I want to see a base court of land that belongs to you, and it then doesn't.
Okay, that's simple.
Well, we're going to see in the Gemara. It sounds poshut, but we're going to see there's a chiddush in it. The Mishnah doesn't just tell us things for nothing. So, yeah. Okay. So, again, the Gemara asks, like with the money, why are we saying if he doesn't have the base court of land where the Einim Kodesh, shouldn't we be concerned maybe he does have V'oid Tanya, and in fact we learn in a Braisa Shemi Yeshloi that may Chashin and Shemi Yeshloi, we do have to be concerned that he does have such land, and the answer is like Kasha Habakudosh Vadai Habakudosh Sopik. Again, if he has the base court of land, then she's Mekodesh Vadai. If not, we can't be sure that he doesn't own it someplace else, and therefore that would be only a Kodesh Sopik. Well, the Gemara says, Lomali the Misne, Gabi Arav, Lomali the Misne, Gabi Zuzi. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us this point by land and by money? And the answer is Tricha. The Iyashmin and Gabi Zuzi, if it only told us by money, you would say, you know why? If we don't, why in particular the Braisa is telling us that if we don't see that he has the money, then Einim Kodeshes, is Mishra Davidi Inchi Dematzni. It's common enough that people hide their money. So just because, so like this, we may even have Adim that come forward and say, this guy doesn't own 200 zuz, but you don't know. He might be squirreling away 200 zuz and nobody knows about it. So therefore, you could say, therefore, there's reason to say Kiddush is suffered. Aval Ara, but when it comes to land, Ema, you would think, Ede Islay Ara Kola Islay. You would think if he actually owns a base court of land, there would be a Kol, because it is a significant amount of land. So therefore, if we have evidence that he doesn't own it, or we don't have such a Kol at all, maybe she shouldn't even be in the Kodesh Mesafik. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Mishnah is telling us the Chiddush that nevertheless, even in that case, maybe he does have land Maybe he does have land someplace else that we don't know about, and therefore, even in that case, it would be Kedusha Sofer. The point is, Rashi says that that we're making the comparison between land and money, just like with money, you have Vaday versus Sofer, because we can never say for sure that he doesn't have 200 zuz. The same way with Karka, it would be a Sofer. The best you can have, if we don't know that he has the land, is a Sofer. We can't say really for sure, because there's no coil, therefore he doesn't own the land at all. So why couldn't it have said it by land, and then we'd learn a Kavach Chomer that's by money, but Mephoshim explained that maybe the Gemara's question is primarily more on the Brises, why each Brise is saying Chashin and Shem Yeshloi, and the answer would be the Brises are written according to the order of the Mishnayos, and since in the Mishnayos first it mentioned money, and only then, later on, the Tana said the same thing with land, therefore the Brises had no choice to follow suit, because we couldn't have said money, and we would derive land from it. It's true, if they had taught the Brisa or the Mishnah of land first, then maybe they could have, and the Meiri finds a way to say that there's a Chiddush, maybe with money over land as well.
Talitlam has one din and Karka has another.
No, so ultimately we're saying the same din applies to both. That in both cases, if we know that he has the 200 zuz or the Karka, then she's Mekudeshes Mivadai, and if not, then it's only Kedusha Sofer. The point is, we shouldn't think maybe money and land are different, because people commonly hide away money, but they don't come. You can't hide land. So therefore, so nevertheless, the Mishnah and the Braisa are telling us it's the same thing. Okay. We said I'm a Nazi.
What about if the land?
What
about if land has achrayus? It's encumbered. Is it still considered ownership?
Thanks for bringing that up. Mephoshim say that then we could still say that then we could still say that then she is Mekudeshes, because it's true, if he defaults on his loan, then the land is going to be taken away. But in general, people do pay off their loans and keep their land, so therefore that's good enough for us to consider that she is Mekudeshes. One of the Mephoshim says that, I think, Atzmas Yosef.
That was the living.
Yeah, we find elsewhere in the Gemara, a person is expected to own land. A person who doesn't own land, we learned in Yevamos, is considered Ois Mensch and other things like that. So yeah, therefore the expectation is if he owns land, he's probably going to be able to hold on to it.
What happens if he owns land but he's in foreclosure?
So you mean, in other words, where he did default on the loan and now already we're in the state of Adrachta or Tirfa or whatever, maybe then it wouldn't be considered his land anymore, because now there's a good reason to think that he may lose it. I don't know. It's a good point. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say maybe there's a difference. Once you get to the point of Tirpa, where it's a whole long process that Amma describes the details in Hilchos Malva V'Loiva, collecting together from different Gemaras, where the end point is actually where the Malva takes over the land. But obviously, once that happens, then it's not his land anymore. But up till that point, I don't know. Maybe we could say there's still a chance that he's gonna salvage it and end up keeping it. Maybe there comes a point when we say it's less likely. I don't know.
Till then, he's eating from
it. Till then, the fact is, he has payers from it, yeah. Actually, the truth is, when he has payers, the truth is, when the Malva starts eating payers from it, is a machloikas elsewhere in the Gemara, whether it's from when they write the Adrachta, or from when they, which gives him permission to go and look around for fields that belong to this guy to start the next part of the process, or whether at that point, the next thing is we start auctioning it off to see who wants to buy it, and that way, whoever is going to pay the most for it, will raise the money that way. So you have a machlokas elsewhere in the Gemara at what point the Malva starts eating, or the new owner, or whatever, starts eating payers from it. But yeah. So the Mishnah had continued. I'm a nas sheyeshli b'makom ploni. If he says I'm a nas that I have land in such and such a place, im yeshlo b'chulas. So if he actually owns karka in that place, then mekudeshes, and if not, then not. And here we can't say suffix mekudeshes anymore, because it's easy to see: does he actually own land in this place or not? But the Gemara asks Pshita, still isn't that obvious? If he doesn't have land in that place, the Tanai wasn't fulfilled. What's the havamina? And the answer is ma'udetema. Oh my law, you would think that maybe the husband can say to her, my nafkalach mina, what do you care? The karka is not where I said, but it may be further away. No problem. I'm not tarachna or my sina. I'll go to the tircha. Why is it you want me to own land? The pastor is because you want us to have a stable source of income from the family farm. Fine. So what do you care if it's further away? I'll schlep out there and I'll bring the fruit to you, and therefore you shouldn't care whether it's closer or further away. Kamash Malon, therefore, the Tanya is telling us that no, it's not the, still the fact is he wasn't Mekayim tonight. And the Rashba discusses that now you might have, for example, if it's further away, the fact is it's more of a tircha for her. Sometimes she wants to go to the field and see her, see it herself, and then check on it, check out things and whatever. So if it's further away, then it's a bigger tircha for her. So actually the Rashba says, maybe if the field was actually closer than he said, maybe she would be Mekudeshes, because after all, then it's less of a tircha for her. On the other hand, different other Rishonim, I think the Ritva, says that no, even in that case, the fact is the Tanai wasn't fulfilled, and maybe she Davka sometimes wants to go for a longer trip, and now it turns out that it's next door, and then it's hardly worthwhile. So therefore, either way, he would say, and Mekudeshes, the Rashba would say that if the field is closer than Mekudeshes. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, Manas Sha'arech Beis Kurof, if he says, I'll show you a Beis Kurof of land that I own, then he has to show her that he actually owns it. And if not, if he shows her just a valley full of fields, Einem Kodeshes. So the Gemara says, Tonim, we learn in a Braisa. Again, she expected to see Kauka that belongs to him, not that belongs to other people. And therefore, the Mishnah said, Bim Herab Bika. So if he shows it to her in a valley full of fields, then she's not Mekudeshes. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Well, again, that's obvious. Once we established that she wants to see his own land, then this isn't going to work. And the answer is, Loit Sricha, Denoket Bedistura. What if he has the land as a distura, which is the arrangement that you make with an oris? So an oris works the land, and he's entitled to a certain percentage of the crops. So therefore, you could say in that sense, he's considered kind of like a partial owner of the field. But the fact is, eventually he will get a portion of the crops. But right now he doesn't have it yet. He doesn't. And in fact, the Shittalo Nodalami points out. So in that case, then we have to ask: once we set it by the money changer or by the iska, why do we have to repeat this point by a resource? And the point is, because by an iska, you could say, look, again, he can't dissolve the partnership and take out his money on his own. He has to first check with the other guy. But here, by the oris, the fact is, throughout the year, as crops grow, he can take his percentages. Nevertheless, we're still saying Einem Mekudeshes, because the fact is the land doesn't belong to him. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to bring up a point. So now the question is like this. We said in the Mishnah all these cases where he says, I own, or I'm going to show you that I own a base court of land. Now we have to figure out what exactly will be included in that base court. Given that a base core is an actual size, again, 75,000 square amas, what if he has a field that is that size, but, for example, you have parts of it are rocky, or parts of it are depressions in the ground? So we have to figure out to what extent do those count or not count as part of the field, as far as measuring it and as far as deciding whether he actually owns a base core of land or not.
It's horrible. So, it's stone, you can't do anything.
No, that's not so much that if it's stone, you can't. I mean, if the whole thing is stone, obviously you can't do anything with it. But the point is, we have to figure out when do we say such things are just going to be bottled to the field and we don't care. We can measure them with the field anyway, versus when do we say that not? We have to survey and we have to exclude them. We find, for example, you know, he's got 75,000 square amas, but 1,000 of them are rocks or rocky areas or whatever. So we have to subtract it. Well, then he doesn't have the base court of land. So, yeah. So the Gemara is going to first bring similar dinim, where you talk about a base core in connection with two other areas of halacha, and then we're going to discuss which one we're going to say there are different dinim by each one of them, and then try to figure out here by kiddushin which din applies. Where the first one we're going to have is the case of matish sdei achuza. So we touched on it in the first parak of our Masechta. You have the case, a person donates to Hekdesh a field that he inherited from his ancestors in Eretz Yisrael. The din is, what we do is, so as long as Yovel is in effect, so the din is going to be like this. When he sells to a Hedyot, we know what happens is he gets it back in Yovel. When he's Makdesh it, it depends, the Pasuk says. If he buys it back from Hekdesh before Yovel, then good. Then he keeps it. And his sons yaushin it from him eventually, etc. If not, if Hekdesh sells it to somebody else before Yovel, then what happens is in Yovel, it doesn't go back to the original owner. In effect, it's considered as though Hektish is the original owner. So now at Yovel, the other guy gives it back to Hektish, and in turn, it gets distributed to the Kohanim of the Mishmo who's on that are on duty when Yom Kippur of Yovel comes. Those are the dinim of Sdei Achuzah. Now, in that connection, the Pasuk mentions, how do you value such a field? You don't figure out the actual market value of the land. Rather, Xeris HaKosev, you figure out the value of the land according to a fixed rate. The Pasuk says, Zerach Choymer Sa'urim B'chamishim Shekel Kosev. You figure for every area where you could plant a choymer of barley, a choymer is another name for a kor. So 30 sa. So again, we're talking an area of 75,000 square amos. For every one of that, at the beginning of Yovel, right after the previous Yovel, that will be worth 50 sloy. So in other words, so you donate that to Hektish. Now you want to buy it back from Hektish, or somebody else wants to buy it back from Hektish. So if it's right after Yovel, you're going to be paying 50 sloyim for every base core. Then, for example, if 10 years have passed, so now you prorate it. The Gemara explains, and Erchin actually brings it on the Psukim, every seller consists of 48 pundyonim, so therefore the 50 sloyim break down to 49 sloyim and 48 pundyonim. So you come out to one seller and one pundyon per year. Really, you have one extra punyan, that's because of money changers, fees, whatever. Let's not get into that. The point is, let's say 10 years have passed, and now you or somebody else wants to buy it back from Hektish. Now the value is 40 seller and 40 punyan, because there are still 40 years left to go to Yovel. And so forth. So that's the din. But now that din only applies to agricultural fields. So now the Gemara is going to discuss. So again, what happens then if you have a field that contains rocky areas or depressions? Then what do we do with those? So gabe Hektish tnan. So in connection with Hektish, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, hamakdish sadeu b'sha'asa yovel. A person is makdish his field when yovel is in effect. Meaning, because when yovel is not in effect, then you don't have these dinim anymore, since now there's not going to be any time limit to how long it's going to remain in Hektish's hands, or how long a person who bought it from Hektish is going to keep it. Then therefore you don't do this business of chamishim shekel kosef and a seller and punyan per year. Rather, you figure out the actual market value of the field, and whoever buys it from Hektish buys it at that rate. But here we're talking about b'shasa yovel, when yovel is in effect.
That year.
Right? No, not in the year of Yovel. Tosfos points out there was a girsa here in the Gemara, b'shnas ha-Yovel, but we don't mean in the year of Yovel itself. There is a machloikus in the Gemara in Erchin between Rav and Shmuel. What happens if a person is makdish a field during Yovel year itself? Is it that it never becomes kodesh in the first place, because Yovel is when fields are supposed to be returning to your owners? You don't have the ability that year to be makdish it. Or is it that Kodesh v'yotze, it is Kodesh, and then it goes out and returns to him because Yovel comes and gives it back to him? Whatever the case, the point is that, no, we're not talking about in the year of Yovel itself. We're talking about, let's say he was Makdash it right after Yovel, or 10 years after Yovel, or 30 years after Yovel, or whatever. Anyway, the point is, so the Mishnah says, Noisin b'zerach lo mesorim shchamish m'shakol kasev. So again, like the Pasuk says, he's going to be paying for every base kor, a choymer is another name for a kor. For every base kor, he's going to be paying 50 sloyim, meaning, and that's again, if it's right after Yovel, if it's years after Yovel, then we prorate the amount, one seller and one punyan per year. The Mishnah continues, what if you have holes in the ground or depressions in the ground that are 10 or more tfachim deep, or rocks that are 10 or more tfachim tall, those are not measured together with it to count towards the base core. If they're any less than 10 tefachim, then they're counted together with it.
Holes are going to go with just store water.
So that's what we're going to talk about water in a minute. Tosfos points out, we don't mean that those things won't become Kodesh at all. The fact is, they will become Kodesh together with the field. They will become Hektish together with the field. All we mean is that the rate of Zerah Choymasodim, Bachamishim Shekel Kosef, will not apply to them. Instead, we're going to figure out the actual value of those areas, and those are going to be bought back from Hektish at their actual market value. So, Vahavinan Ba, now, so in the Gemara in Erchin, the Gemara asks, loy kodshu. It is true that they're not going to be kodesh together with the land. They can't be measured as part of the land. In other words, to say, Rashi says, you're not going to say that the slope down into this depression, for example, is going to be counted as part of the land area. But nikdishu ba'ape nafshayu, shouldn't they become kaddish on their own? Meaning, in other words, Rashi over here explains that what it means is so fine. You're not going to measure the slope as well as the bottom of it and count it towards the base core. Fine, the slope maybe not, but why don't we count the bottom of it? You have a hole in the ground over there. The bottom of it has a certain area, so count that area and add it up towards the value of the base towards the size of the base core. So why don't we do that? Elsewhere, Rashi explains, and then the Ramban over here also understands Rashi over here would be saying the same thing. The question is, look, eventually you're going to be measuring them. You're going to be measuring them anyway. So what's the difference? What are you going to say? You're going to have 74,000 amas of flat land, and then you're going to have another 1,000 amas at the bottom of these depressions, or you're just going to say to begin with 75,000. What's the difference? Either way, you're getting a value of 75,000. The Rash Tosfos brings that the Rashbam in the Gemara in Bava Basra, because soon the Gemara is going to bring a case in Bava Basra and draw an analogy with this. And so the Rashbam explains over there, the question is that why don't we consider each of those little depressions to be a separate little field of its own, and it should go at the same rate of Zerachoy Masorim Bachamishim Shekel Kosef. In other words, implying, so the Rashbam says, in other words, if it was all one field, one contiguous field, then you have to buy back the whole thing or nothing. You can't buy it back piecemeal from Hekdesh. But like this, shouldn't we argue that in effect, what you have is two fields over here, one of 74,000 square amas, one of 1,000 square amas, and each one you could buy back from Hekdesh individually. Tosfos says, no, we learned earlier in Amasechta that when it comes to Makdash Se'achoza, anyway, you could buy it back piecemeal. You're not required to buy back the whole thing from Hekdash at once. When you sell a field to somebody else and you want to get it back before Yovel, then yes, it has to be that you buy back the whole thing. But when it comes to Hekdash, it's not like that. So therefore, so Tosfos says, not like Rashbam's explanation, rather like Rashi's explanation. That again, either the question is, fine, we shouldn't count the entire area of the depression because we're not going to count the slope down to it, let's say, but at least we should count the bottom of it. Or the question is, anyway, you're going to be counting the whole thing together. So what's the difference whether you figure separately or whether you figure together? Anyway, you're going to say, well, look, these depressions are not in themselves the size of a base core. Maybe they're not important enough. Maybe the Torah is saying only when you have a full base core do you do the special valuation of Zerachoy Masorim, but otherwise you do at market value. And by the way, the Mishnah points out there in Erchin that sometimes there can be a kula and sometimes there's a chumra in it. For example, let's say somebody was makdish an extremely good quality field. The Mishnah gives an example over there. You have an area near Sevasti, which is the ancient city of Shomron. The ground there is extremely fertile, and a Zerachoy Masorim there at market value would be worth a lot more than 50 sela. Nevertheless, you're getting to buy it back from Hekdesh at the value of only 50 sela. So you're going to say maybe that kind of thing only applies to a full base core. Maybe here you have these depressions in the ground. Maybe it doesn't count, maybe because they're not large enough. But no, or a minu. I have a contradiction because a braisa says when the pasuk says, so when the pasuk describes this din of sdei achuza, the expression is v'im misdei achuzase yakdish ish la'ashem. If a person donates to Hekdesh a field of his achuza. So the question is soda matamad lema. Why does it have to say the word sdei? It could have said v'im achuzase yakdish ish. What is an achuza? The land that a person inherited from his ancestors. So why does it say the word sdei? So like this, Lafisha Nema Zerachoy Masorim Bachamishim Shekel Kosef, since the Pasuk establishes this rate of 50 sloyim for every Zerachoymer, Ainli Elashehikdish Be'inyan Azeh, so from that you would only know if he was Makdish a full base core or more than that, Minayin Lerabis Lesech, how do we know that we also include if he was Makdish an area of a Lesech, which is half a core, so it would be, 37,500 square amas, v'chatzi lesech, or a half a lesech, sta'ah, or only a sa'ah, which is 1/30 of a, which is 1/30 of a kur, tarkov, or what if it's an area of land where you can only plant a tarkov, which is half a sa'ah. Tarkov stands for trei v'kav, which means there are six kavim in a sa'ah, so half a sa'ah is three kavim. Tarkov stands for trei, two kavim, v'kav plus another kav, so that's three. V'chatzi tarka, we're only half of that. V'afilu roiva, what if a person is only, what if a person donates to Hekdesh a piece of land that's only the size of a roiva, the size that you can plant a quarter of a kav of grain in, and that's a tiny fraction of zera choy masorim. How do we know that you do at the same rate? Now it's not going to be 50 sela. It's not going to be 50 sela. Of course, a base roiva is only a base roiva is only a little over 100 square amos. But it means we divide down. If 75,000 square amos is 50 sloyim, then 100 square amos, 100 square amos is going to be whatever fraction of 50 sloyim that's going to come out to. So how do we know that that's the case? Talmud lema sodim mikol makom. That's why the pasuk says sodim regardless, and all these dinim apply to that. So it's not a matter of the size of the field. So we're back to the question. And these depressions in the ground or these rocks, granted they're not part of the field, but why don't we count them? Why don't we at least count some part of them, as Rashi says over here, or why don't we consider them, as Rashbam says over there, as little miniature fields of their own? And the answer is Omar of Omama Ukva Bahoma, Hochman Koyim Malay Mayimaskinan. We're talking about over here depressions that are filled with water. The Lab Benezria, you can't plant in them. And the pasuk says Zera Choy Masorim. So here, where it's not Zera, where it's an area, so the depression is full of. So the rocks, the Gemara didn't ask so much about. It's obvious you can't plant on rocks. But the depressions, the Gemara assumes, so what? You can go down into the depression and plant them. But now, Ma'ukva Bachoma is telling us, no, because they're filled with water, so you can't plant them. And the Gemara says, Dekanami. In fact, we can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Dekatanya Dumri Desloyim Gvoyim, because the Mishnah compares them to high rocks. In the same way as high rocks you can't plant on when they're 10 or more Tfachim high. And then the same thing, the depressions has to be areas where you can't plant anything. And why would you not be able to plant in them? Because they're full of water. Well, the Gemara asks, Shashmami, not that proves it. Well, well, then in that case, if they're full of water, you can't plant in them no matter how deep or shallow they are. So why are we saying Davka 10 Tfachim? Implying that if they were less than 10 Tfachim deep, you would count them towards the area of the field. And the answer is, Hanu Nagani Da'ara Mikru, because when they're less than 10 Tfachim, they're basically bottled to the land. That people call them the bowls of the land. Nagani actually relates to the word. You have in Parashas Mishpatim, Vayosem Bo'agonos, that when Moshe had the Bechorim bring Korbonos for the Jewish people right before Mount Torah, so he took the blood and put it in basins, Bo'agonos. So here these are like the basins of the land. Because they're less than 10 tefachim deep, and they contain water, therefore they're bottled to the land. Yeah, I mean, b'pashtus, you could use the water in them for irrigating the field, but the point is, regardless, they're still considered bottled, even though you might say, I don't need that. It's a place that's plentiful, where there's plentiful rain, and I don't need these depressions to be filled with water. Nevertheless, though, they're still bottled to the land, because people think of them as just like basins, as just like an adjunct to the land. And similarly, shedra, the outer mikru, similarly, the rocks. It's true you can't do much with the rocky areas, but people, they're called like the shedra of the land. They're pieces that stick out of land. Look, the Rashbam says there in Baba Basra, you can't expect land is not going to be perfectly flat. Of necessity, there are going to be higher and lower areas. And them, so up to 10 tefachim, we don't consider it to be something separate. Okay. So that takes care of the case of Sdei Achuza. So in short, with Sdei Achuza, the din is that when it comes to depressions in the ground, in order for them to not be counted as part of the field, to have to be that you value them separately, is going to have to be that they're 10 tefachim deep and filled with water. Now, what about, the Gemara continues, Gabi Mecher Tnan. Now, when it comes to a sale, the Gemara asks us in the Gemara tells us in Bava, the Mishnah tells us in Bava Basra. A person says to somebody else, I'm going to sell you a base court of land. And there are depressions in the ground 10 or more tefachim deep. Or rocks that are 10 or more tefachim high. They don't get measured with it to count towards the base core. And if they're any less in size, if they're any less in height or in depth than that, then they do get counted with it. And there, Ma'ukva Bachoma explains, there, the din is if the depressions are 10 tefachim deep, even if they're not filled with water, they still don't count towards the area of the base core. Meaning, so Reuven is selling to Shimon a base core, and then they go to survey it, and they find that in the base core, there was a depression 10 tefachim deep. And even though it doesn't have water, Shimon can say, well, look, this doesn't count to the field. So in that case, you haven't sold me a base core. So then I want to void the sale, or I want you to give me another piece of land to compensate me for it or whatever. Now Reuven can say, fine, you know, fine, then let's say, you know, in that case, then I'll sell you less than a base quart of land plus this area as well, and then and we'll adjust the price accordingly. And of course, if Shimon agrees, then fine. But anyway, the point is, my timer. Now, why is it, why by Hekdesh we said it has to be filled with water for it to not be counted as part of the land, and here by a sale, we don't say that. The reason is because a person doesn't want to be paying for one field. Like it's going to seem like two or three places. Right. A place like that, not so much spread out, but a place like that that's 10 tefachim deep. Sure, he can plant in there, but it means in effect he has to treat it as a separate field. He can't just take the oxen and the plow, for example, and go directly down in there. He has to do it as a separate thing. So therefore, we can assume when a person intended to buy a base core, he intended to buy an area that he can farm as one big base core together. So again, when it's less than 10 tefachim tall, sure, he may not be able to work these areas so easily, but already we say shedra da'ar, or 10 tefachim deep, fine, we say nagoni da'ar mikru, we call them just the basins of the land. But derech klal, people think of those as part of the field. Once it's 10 tefachim deep, and it's already a reshus of its own, then he can say, I didn't intend to buy two or three fields, I wanted to buy one field.
Those days, I mean, a stone on top by a stamp, those days having a big pit to be able to fill water was
again, if you use it to fill water, fine. In fact, one of the Mephoshim points out, if you have, for example, if there are water pits dug deliberately in the field and to be filled with water and plastered or whatever, sure, those count towards the area of the field. But here we're talking about stem, a natural depression over there. Sometimes it may be filled with water, but not always necessarily. And yeah. The point is, though, still, he expects to use as much of the land as possible for farming. And now he can't because some of it is deeper, and therefore it's going to be harder to take care of that area. Well, so now that we established that, hachamai. So now the question is, in our case of Kiddushin, when the man says to the woman, I'm anas that I own a base core of land, and it turns out that his base core includes depressions that are 10 tefachim deep. Do we say they don't count towards the base core only if they're filled with water, like the Hekdesh? Or do we say they don't count towards it even if they're not filled with water, like by a sail? So that's the question, in other words. Here he says, I'm the Kaddish you, I'm a Nas that I own a base core of land. Well, when does it count? What thing? What depressions count towards the base core? We said by Hekdesh and we said by sails. This is neither. This is a third case.
Oh, do we compare?
No. Which one do we compare it to? My. So what's the hachamai? What's the din over here? La hekdish minaminin la or the mecha minaminin la. Do we compare it to hekdish or do we compare it to a sale? And the answer is mistabra la hekdish minaminin la. It's logical to say that we compare it to hekdish. So unless the depressions are filled with water, then they will count towards the area. Do amala, because he can tell her, anot tarachna v'zarano masina or masina. I will go to the tircha of planting that area as well, and I will bring the produce from there. Meaning, it's one thing before we said, for example, the field is further away. She may want to visit it sometimes or whatever. She may keep an eye on things. But here, where it's she's not the one doing the actual farm work, he is. So therefore, if he's saying, you know what, I don't care. I'm willing to go to that extra tircha of unhitching the horses and unhitching the plow and rehitching it over there in order to work that area, etc., or to plant by or to plow and plant by hand or whatever. And what do you care? You're still going to be getting a full base core produce for the household income every year. Then fine, there's no reason she should object to that. So if the area is full of water, that's one thing. You can't actually plant there. But if it's not full of water, then we don't care the fact that it may be extra tircha to plant that area, because fine, he's willing to take that tircha on himself. Okay. So we've been talking about in the last couple of Mishnayos about tnoyim that a person might make in Kiddushin. So now let's talk about the general concept of how a tnai works. So the Mishnah says, Rav Meir Omer, hold tnai she'ena kofel k'tnai b'nei godu b'nei ruven. Now, where do you find in the Torah, you find a case of a tnai? You have famously by Bnei God or Bnei Reuven. They come to Moshe, they say, give us the land in Eivrei Yarden. And after Moshe spends 10 psukim telling them all, how could you do that? You're going to discourage all the other Jews from conquering Eretz Yisrael. Then they tell him, no, we didn't mean that, we don't plan to help conquer Eretz Yisrael. We're going to do that. We just want afterwards that this land should belong to us. And Moshe makes the deal and calls in Yeshua and the Rosh HaOvis, etc. And they make an official deal. And he tells them, Im Yavru Bnei God Bnei Reuven Itchem as a Yarden, if Bnei God and Reuven cross the Yarden with you, Kol Cholut Vamelchama, every armed soldier and goes to war, Lefnei Hashem, V'nich B'sha Eretz Lefneichem, and the land is conquered before you, Unasata Mamas Eretz HaGila V'Achuza, then give them the land of Gilad as an inheritance, V'im Lo Yavru Chalutzim Itchem, if they don't go forward, armed in front of you, then they're going to get a share of land among you in Eretz Knan, meaning they're not going to get Eivra Yarden. Or at least they're not going to get it exclusively. Different Mephoshim talk about that. Maybe you could say Tosfos discusses over here that maybe, for example, you could have that they're not going to get exclusive possession of it. Maybe it would mean that all the Shvatim equally will share in that land or something. Anyway, so that's a Tanai. So the Meir Oimer. So now in the Mishnah, the Meir says, "Kol Tanai she'ainik Tanai bnei Godu bnei Reuven ainik Tanai." If you make a Tanai not following the format of that Tanai bnei Godu bnei Reuven, then it's not a valid Tanai. And therefore, we have a number of things we learn from that. So first of all, what would that mean? Ainik Tanai. It would mean that then, if it's ainik Tanai, means even if the Tanai doesn't come true, then the thing is still Miskayim. For example, so Rashi gives an example. What if he says, Hareza Gittich, I'll manas that you give me 200 zuz, but he didn't repeat the Tanai, then we would say the get is effective even if she doesn't give him the 200 zuz. Because the Tanai was not a valid Tanai, because he didn't repeat it. He didn't say, and if you don't give me the 200 zuz, then you won't be, then you won't be in the Goreshes. In other words, we don't say miklal hey not to shemei alav. We often have a concept that once the Torah says something in the positive, we can infer the negative from it. But here we don't hear what a mayor is saying. We don't say that. Rashi points out we also learn several other things. We learn tnai kofu from this. We also learn that you need hein kodim alav. We need first of all tnai kodim lamaisa. You have to have that the tnai is mentioned before the result. So, for example, you see, Moshe is saying, if Bnei God or Bnei Reuven go and help conquer out Israel, then you should give them this land. Not the positive is something else, but in other words, he didn't say, give them this land if they go and conquer out Israel. That would be Maisa Kodim Tanai. That, Rabbi Meir is saying, would not be a valid Tanai. If he had said, give them this land if they go conquer out Israel, then the result would be they'd have to give them the land whether they actually did or not. Tanai would be Batal, and the Maisa would be Kayim.
Okay, I came first.
Okay. Yeah. So that's that. Also, you need hein kodim lalav. You have to put the positive before the negative. That's why he says, if Bnei God or Bnei Reuven go and help conquer, then you give them this land. And if not, then you don't. So you have to have the hein kodim lalav. If he had said it the other way around, if they don't go conquer Eretz Yisrael, don't give them this land. And if they do conquer Eretz Yisrael, do give them the land, then it wouldn't be a valid Tanai, says Rav Meir. We learned this in Gittin as well. We had it, of course, in connection with Gittin. You even had an example over there. The Gemara said, you have a situation where a person makes a tanai that he wants the get to be effective only if he dies, like we learned the other day, because he doesn't. But then we talked about that on the other hand, he doesn't first want to say if I die this should be a get, because he doesn't want to be motzi ra on himself. So we discussed over there that he would actually say, if I don't die, it won't be a get. And if I do die, it will be a get. And if I don't die, it won't be a get. And that way, you still have the hein kodim lalav, but this way he's not poseach pel asot, and that's the first thing.
So
he says, if I don't die, it shouldn't be a get. And if I do die, it should be a get. And if I don't die, it shouldn't be a get. So that way, he still has the hein before the final lav, but that way, he's not starting out with a negative thing against himself. Whatever. The point is, Rav Meir is saying, you have all those rules of Tanoim. So Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, so Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Vayomer aleihem im yavu bnei God bnei Reuven, if bnei God bnei Reuven cross over, then you should give them the land. Uchdevim lo yavu chalutzim, and if they don't go as to leave the army, then don't. So therefore, you see, says Rav Meir, that you need tnai kofel, and then you also learn these various other things. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel disagrees. Rashi says he's disagreeing strictly on the point about Tanai Kofel. He's saying, I agree, fine, on the other things. I agree you need Hein Kodim Lalav and the other things, but I disagree. In that particular case, there was a reason why Moshe had to mention the second half of the Tanai. So therefore, you can't learn from that you always need Tanai Kofel. Because, says Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Tzorech Hadovel Oimer, you had to say the second part, Sheol Molei Kein, if you didn't, Yesh B'mashma, Shafil Be'eretz Kanan, Lo Yinchalu, then it would imply that even they can't even inherit in Eretz Kanan itself. So therefore, so in other words, if Moshe had only said, if they go over and help conquer Eretz Kanan, then give them this land and stop there, then the implication would have been that if they don't get any land at all. So therefore, he had to spell out that nevertheless, they will get a portion of land, but only among you in Eretz Canaan. Now, why would we have thought that? One second. Rashi says, look, the fact is that if they don't help, then they should be penalized. They shouldn't get any part at all. And the Ritva explains in Rashi. In other words, because look, after all, Moshe to begin with had yelled at them and said, how could you do this? You're dissuading everybody else from conquering Eretz Yisrael. So they promised that no, we will go. So now Moshe is saying, look, if they don't end up conquering it, then it shows after all that they are doing it because they're afraid and they're going to infect everybody else with their fear and so forth. And therefore, they deserve to be penalized and not receive any land at all. So therefore, Moshe has to spell out, it's not so they are going to get a share of land regardless. Tosfos actually learns differently. Tosfos Yeshanim here, printed in Tosfos, says that, first of all, Tosfos says that no, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel disagrees with Rav Meir on all the details. Rav Meir is saying you need Tanai Kofel and Tanai Kodim Lamaisa and Hayim Kodim Malav. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is disagreeing with all of that. He's saying you can't learn anything from Tanai B'nai God or B'nai Reuven because there was a special case. But Tosfos also says, Rav Natam says in Tosfos that no, what it means is you would think that why would you think they shouldn't get a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael either? Because you would say since to begin with, they were trying to make this deal. They want to get extra rights to Eretz Gilad, to Eivra Yarden, which otherwise they wouldn't have been specially entitled to. Maybe because of that, in compensation, therefore that means they forfeited their claims to Eretz Canaan. Well, then if they don't end up getting Eretz Gilad because they didn't keep up their end of the bargain, maybe therefore, in effect, they themselves willingly forfeited their area in Eretz Canaan. And therefore, Moshe has to tell the Zkenim that no, it's not so. They are going to get a share in Eretz Canaan regardless. Tosfos also mentions further, we don't mean, for example, if they just sit around and do nothing, they're going to get a share of land. That wouldn't be fair at all. What it means is, in other words, if they do help with the conquest, but they don't lead it. Like this, they said, we'll lead. Nachnu Navr Chalutzim, that we will go first in the front line. So if they don't do that, if they just do like the regular soldiers, then they're going to have an Eretz Canaan. Anyway, so Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying, so you can't derive anything as far as the dinim, at least as far as Tanai Kofel, like Rashi says, or as far as any of the dinim of Tanoim, as Tosfos says, from Moshe's wording over there, because there it was a special case. You can't, let's say because of that, therefore, by Kiddushin, where it's clear if you say, if you say, I'm Makadosh you on condition that I give you 200 zuz, it's obvious that if he doesn't give her the 200 zuz, there's not going to be a Kiddushin. So therefore, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says, you can't derive from Tanai B'nai God or B'nai Reuven that you have to repeat that point. Okay.
Well, probably the Yidden had only one. They only had the Eivra Yarden. They didn't have both.
Right? No, they had both. They had Eivra Yarden and Eretz Canaan. No, so B'nai God or B'nai Reuven, Chatzi Shev Menashe had an Eivra Yarden.
Only.
And the rest of the Shvatim had an Eretz Canaan.
Only. If they wouldn't do it, right. Then they would have it.
Right. So the Gemara says, Shaper Kamalei Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, the Rameir, knew that Rav Chanina ben Gamliel has a very good point. How can Rameir say you learned Tanai Kofel from there if obviously you did have to say the converse, because otherwise you'd think maybe they don't get a portion of land at all? And the answer is, Omalach Rameir, fine, but Rameir can tell you, if you're going to tell me that the words in the Pasuk are not meant to teach us also the point of Tanai Kofel, then the Pasuk could have left out the Pasuk could have just said, the Pasuk didn't have to say, if they don't go over, then they will inherit among you. And where is among you? Obviously, in Eretz Canaan. So, Be'eretz Canaan, normally, why does he have to add the words Be'eretz Canaan? Shmamin of the Tanai Kofel, Hudasa. Therefore, we see that he's coming to tell us the Tanai Kofel. That he's saying, in other words, like this, when he says Be'eretz Canaan means a mute. They're not going to inherit in Eretz Gilad a corresponding portion to what they would have gotten in Eretz Canaan. So from that we learn the Tanai Kofel. If he hadn't said the words Be'eretz Canaan, then fine, you would say what it means is, like Rav Chanina ben Gamliel are saying, he would be saying if they don't. So fine. In other words, what is Rav Chanina ben Gamliel saying? He's saying that Moshe had to say the converse because then you'd think they don't inherit anything at all. Rav Meir is saying, if Moshe had not said anything at all, then maybe you'd be right. You wouldn't know whether they inherit Mechlal anything at all. If he says, Vim lo yavru v'neuchas v'seichem, and does not say the words Be'eretz Canaan, then automatically, then we would say, fine, that clarifies your point, Rav Chanina. Regardless, they're going to be getting a share somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. Once you add the words Be'eretz Canaan, then we don't need that to teach us the point. We already knew they're going to be inheriting land somewhere. So therefore, it means that now we can learn from it the Tanai Kofel. that we have to actually specify and say the converse. And if we don't say it, then they're not going to get. Then he's saying they're not going to get an Eretz Gilad. They're only going to get an Eretz Canaan. Okay. So Rav Chanan ben Gamliel Omar. So what does Rav Chanan ben Gamliel answer to that? He says, "Ilai Kosa Rachmana be'Eretz Canaan." Fine, but if the pasuk had not said the words Eretz Canaan at all. Maybe the v'neuchas of Asochem would be that all of you are going to inherit equally in Eretz Gilad. I will Eretz Knan klal loy. Maybe what it mean? In other words, like this, B'nai Reuven and B'nai God wanted the whole Gilad for themselves. So now maybe Moshe would be saying, if they don't help conquer Eretz Yisrael, they're not going to be getting any part of Eretz Knan. They're going to be getting a share of land, but it will be among you, meaning all the 12 Shvatim equally will join in settling and then taking over Eivre Yarden, and within them, Reuven and God will get some pieces of territory. So therefore, and that's not what Moshe was saying. He was saying that they're going to be getting an Eretz Canaan, and they're going to have no special rights to Eretz Gilad. Therefore, we have to specify the words Eretz Canaan and the pasuk, and we can't learn tonight off it from there. V'Rameir, and Rameir answers back to that. No, b'soichachem kol heicha b'islachu mashma. The word b'soichachem, you can't say Rav Chananel ben Gamliel that it means only in Eivre Yarden. B'soichachem means wherever Jews are going to be living, so that includes an Eretz Canaan as well. So automatically, then, with the words v'neuchas v'seichachem, we would understand that B'nai God or B'nai Reuven are potentially going to have a place in Eretz Canaan, even if they don't lead the army in conquering. So therefore, by adding the words Eretz Canaan, means we're mentioning the concept of Tanai Kofu. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Omer Rav Chananel ben Gamliel, Moshe l'mah davar doimer. What is this like? How you? So what am I saying? That if Moshe had not said the Tanai Kofel, then we would. Now here we have also. So again, Rashi is saying that in effect, what Rav Chananel ben Gamliel is saying is even if they don't help conquer at all, they're not going to lose some portion of land. If it said v'neuchas b'seichem, you would think if they don't go over, they're going to get. They're only going to get some part of Eretz Gilad because they did help conquer Eretz Gilad. They won't get any part of Eretz Canaan. So therefore, it has to say by Eretz Canaan that even if they don't help conquer, they will receive something in Eretz Canaan, even if they didn't help conquer it. That's how Rashi learns. And again, Tosfos disagrees with Rashi and says, no, what's the logic that if they didn't help conquer Eretz Canaan at all, they should get some part of it? And also Tosfos points out, you know, Rav Chananel ben Gamliel is now going to bring a moshul, and it doesn't seem the moshul exactly fits with that. So that's what Tosfos says. It doesn't mean if they don't help at all, it means if they don't lead the army, then they're not going to get their special area in Eretz Gilad. If they don't fight at all, then b'chlal, yeah, we're not going to be giving them anything. Anyway. So Amar Rav Tanya, Amar Rav Chananel ben Gamliel, Moshe l'mah davar doimer. What is this like? La'odim shoy mechalik nechosav l'bonav. A man is giving out his nechosim to his children before he passes away. V'omar, and he says, Ploini b'ni yirash sodeh ploinis. My son Ploini Reuven is going to yarish in this field. Or Ploini b'ni yirash sodeh ploinis. Shimon, my son, is going to yarish in such and such. Or Ploini b'ni yitin masayim zuz v'yirash sodeh ploinis. And my son Levi is going to have to give his brothers 200 zuz and yarshin such and such a field. If he doesn't give the 200 zuz, then he'll just get an equal portion among the other nechasim. So what causes it if he doesn't fulfill the tanai? What is it that makes it that he inherits equally with the other brothers? In other words, that then we say we take. So like this, in other words, the father is saying, if Levi pays his 200 zuz, then he'll have exclusive rights to a third field. If not, then what we're going to do is we're going to take that third field and split it evenly among the three of them. So what causes it that he ends up yarshining in the rest of the nechassim in that third field and everything else equally with his brothers? Is only because the father repeated the Tanai, because the father had said if he gives 200 zuz, in other words, Rashi says if he hadn't repeated it, then it would imply that then you would imply even if he doesn't give the 200 zuz, he's still going to get his rightful share of that field, but he wouldn't get anything from the other two fields at all, and not keneged shau nechasim. The same way Bnei God or Bnei Reuven, only because Moshe says the neuchas ubaseichem Eretz Canaan, then you would think they're going to be restricted only to Eretz Gilad because they deserve a portion in Eretz Gilad because they helped conquer that already. But now we're saying that not. then Moshe is clarifying that no, they will be entitled, as Rashi says, even if they don't help conquer Eretz Canaan at all, they will be entitled to a share in Eretz Canaan, but not exclusively in Gilad. Gilad will be shared equally by everybody, and Eretz Canaan will be shared equally by everybody, and they'll get a portion in it. So therefore, said Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel is saying, that's why Moshe had to double the Tanai, doesn't show that we can learn from it the concept of Tanai Kovel. But the Gemara asks, V'holei damya moshel masnisin. The moshel is not exactly the same as the case of our Mishnah, because hosim katoni yesh b'mashma afilu b'eretz k'nan lo yinchalu, the she'im b'eretz afilu b'eretz k'nan lo yinchalu. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel was saying that without the Tanai Kofel, you would think they're not even going to inherit an Eretz K'nan at all, which implies nowhere, not an Eretz K'nan and not an Eretz Gilad. Alma kfila la eretz gila nami mahani, meaning that the repeating the Tanai helps them to be able to get land in Gilad. And without repeating it, Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel was saying in the Mishnah, they wouldn't have gotten anything. Hocha katoni mi gorom loy lirash im echa b'shav nechasim. Here, Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel was saying in his moshul, what causes him that he yarshins equally with his brothers in the other nechasim, meaning that he gets a share of the first two fields, kfila gorom loy, only because the father repeated the Tanai and made it clear that if he doesn't give Yirash and Echa B'shav Nechasim, then he's going to get an equal portion with his brother and all the other Nechasim. Alma, Kfila, L'shav Nechasim, Hodu Kamahani. So we see that the repeat in the Tanai in Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel's Moshel helps him Yarshin and the other Nechasim. So it's not really the same thing as in the Mishnah, where Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel was saying, without the Kfila, they wouldn't inherit anything at all. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel was saying, if Moshe hadn't repeated the Tanai, then the implication would be, if they don't help conquer, then they're not going to get anything at all. And like this, therefore, Moshe has to clarify, no, they're going to get something in Eretz Canaan, but in the Moshel, either way, the father is saying the son is going to get something. If he pays the 200 zuz, he gets an exclusive field of his own, and if not, then we divide the fields equally among all of them. So the answer is, loy kasha, there's no contradiction between these two. One is before the mayor points out to him the point that we said before that didn't have to say be'eretz Canaan, could have said v'noichazu b'seichachem. Before the mayor pointed that out to Rav Chanina, so Rav Chanina thought that the mayor said that the whole pasuk is coming for Tanai Kofel, and therefore he's bringing his and therefore that would imply that without that, then he says what he says in the Mishnah that he says to the mayor. How could you say Moshe didn't have to say the lawyer at all, then it would imply they wouldn't get anything at all. But after in the Gemara, how the boss of the name later, mayor of Neuchazu, after the mayor points out, sure, I agree that Moshe had to say something extra, but he didn't have to say the words Be'eretz Canaan. So then Reb Chanan ben Gamliel understands, now I understand what you're saying, Reb Meir. You're not saying they would have gotten nothing at all. You're saying they would have gotten an area in Eretz Canaan, but not in Eivra Yarden. And therefore it had to specify to tell us that in that case they're going to get a piece of land exclusively in Canaan and not in Gilad at all, even though by rights they should deserve some because they helped conquer Gilad. And Rav Chanan ben Gamliel is therefore bringing his moshel that why should it be necessary for him to say Be'eretz Canaan? Either way, it's clear that they're going to be entitled. It's already implied that they're going to be entitled to get something in Eretz Canaan. You don't need to say the words Be'eretz Canaan for that, or rather the other way around. Rav Meir said you don't need to say the words Be'eretz Canaan. Therefore, you have it for Tanai Kofel. Rav Chanan ben Gamliel is saying no. If you didn't say Be'eretz Canaan, then you would think that they only get in that they only get an Eivra Yarden together with the other Shvatim and nothing at all in Eretz Canaan.
That's why
Rav Chanan ben Gamliel brings his marshal. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go through a number of places in Chumash where we have a Tanai Kofel, and according to Rav Chanan ben Gamliel, why do we need them? The first one is from our parsha. The Shleim Alad Meir Dichtiv. What happens when Hashem says to when Hashem says to Cain after Cain is disappointed that his korban wasn't accepted? And by the way, you know, you learn from that. We're worth thinking about as something in connection with the parasha. You know, we always think of Cain as a real lowlife, but you know, the fact that he first of all had the idea, he was the first one to have the idea to bring the korban even before Hevel, and second of all, that he was so disappointed that the Eibishter didn't accept it. It shows he was, you know, he was a person of a certain madrega. He wasn't as good as he could have been, but he's not a lowlife either. The fact that he went and killed afterwards, yeah, probably he let his Yetzirah get the better of him. But at least, you know, to start with, he was a Dehoyman Amesh. Anyway, so Hashem tells him.
He was
from Olam HaToyu and then Cain is from Olam
HaTikun. So you have to have you have to make a start here, and then they owe you from above.
Yes, he's kind of the first one. He's the first one to invent the concept of Sirusa Devasata, which is a tremendous thing. Yeah. Anyway, so Hashem tells him, Im Tetiv Se'es, Hashem tells him, if you do good, then your Averus will be forgiven and you'll get reward. So on the Pasuk, Rashi translates Se'es, and he says, like Tyrum Onkelos says, that your Averus will be forgiven. Here, Rashi translates, you will take a reward. Masa Schar, you will receive a Schar from Hashem. The Imloy Se'tiv, and Hashem continues, if you don't do good, La Pesach Chatas Roivitz, then sin is crouching by the door, meaning that punishment for Averus is waiting to come to you. Or Rashi says on the pasuk means the Yetzirah is going to get the better of you. Anyway, the point is, so b'shleim le'Rav Meir, hainu d'chtiv, im teitiv seis, v'im lois seitiv la'pesach chatas reivitz. According to Rav Meir, we understand why Hashem has to do the Tanai Kofel. Because otherwise, without the Tanai Kofel, you would say, maybe even if he doesn't do good, he would still get a schar. Because again, if Hashem said, if you do good, you'll get a schar, and he didn't say, if you don't do good, you won't get a schar, then the implication is he's going to get the schar regardless. That's how Rav Meir holds that Tanoyim work. So Elo Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Elo Rav Chanina Lomali, but according to Rav Chanina, why do you need that? According to him, you don't need Tanai Kofel. And the answer is Sakhdad Chamina, because otherwise, without Hashem saying, you would think, Im Tetiv Agra means if you do good, you'll get reward. The Im Loi Setiv Loi Agra Vloi Dina, if you don't do good, there won't be any reward, but there won't be any punishment either. Kamash Malon, therefore Hashem has to specifically say, no, not just you won't get reward if you don't do good, you're going to be punished. La Pesa Chatas Revitz. So even Rav Chanina ben Gamliel agrees that you have to mention that detail because otherwise you wouldn't have known that. Mefoshim, by the way, bring up an interesting point. Here the Gemara is going to be bringing a bunch of psukim in this connection. Now we've learned a few times in the Masechta, Shnei Ksuma, Boim Pechor, and Melamdim. Fakir, you would say maybe in these particular cases, in each case, it had to be repeated for some reason, like Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says. How can you learn from them to everything else, like Rav Meir is saying?
Because each one has to
be said. Right. So in fact, the vote would be Rashi and Tosfos elsewhere explain that Rav Meir would say each one there's some particular drasha that you learn from them. We've learned before that when you don't say Shnei Ksuma Boim Pechad, when you couldn't have learned one from the other because each one has a special feature. Here you have each one there's some individual drasha that you learn from it. So in fact, we learned in Gittin just that we had Rav Meir and the Chachamim argued on this point of Tanai Kofel, and Rav Shimon Gamliel said, "What do you mean? Every single place in Pesukim you have a Tanai Kofel." So what does that mean? So does that mean that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying like the Chachamim against Rav Meir? How can you learn Tanai Kofel from the Pesukim when we see it's Shnei Ksuma Boim Pechad? Or the other way is Adarabi, he's proving Rav Meir's point. You see that in every case, the Torah had to specify it. So again, the point is, in other words, that according to that way of looking at it, Rav Meir would say every one of them is needed for a unique drosha, and therefore you couldn't learn one from the other. So it's not Shnei Ksuma Boim Pechad. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishleim le Rav Meir, we can understand according to Rav Meir, Hainu Dechtiv, when Avraham sends Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzchak, so Avram tells him, or Eliezer later on when he repeats the story over, he says that Avraham tells him, "Oz tinokem me'olasi, then you will be cleansed from my from my condition, from my oath. If you go to my family and he continues being lo yitnu loch, and if they don't give to you, then you'll be cleansed from my ola." So according to the mayor, we understand why he needs to specify that, because then it means to otherwise it would mean the shvuah is chal on the Eliezer even no matter what. Elo Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, but lomali, but according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, why do you need that? And the answer is again, it's true. You would think sakdad chamina heicha d'nichalol l'dida. What if the woman that Eliezer finds is willing to go and marry Yitzchak? V'lo nichalol l'didu, but the family doesn't want to give her away. Maybe Eliezer should be required to grab her by force and take her against their will. Kamash Malan, therefore, Avraham clarifies and says, and if they don't give her to you, then you'll be cleansed from my Ola, meaning, in other words, that it doesn't, even if she's willing, you have to have the family willing to be also.
Well, we could say, Rivka and Rashi says that she told love.
In the end, she tells them, Eilech, I'm going to go, even if you don't like it. Right. But they're not trying to force her. It's not like Eliezer has to fight them to avoid it. All he tells them is, you know, don't delay me, and then fine, they agree. Had they still said, no, we're not letting her go, you're going to have to fight us for her, then he would then he would have been potter from doing that, because Avraham had told him, Vim lo yitnu lach lo yisa nachi me'alas.
And Baruch herself tells them that I'm going to go on my own.
I'm going to go regardless, in other words. But if they had actually still opposed, been ready to oppose him by force, then he would have been potter from it. Right. Okay. So Tosfos discusses this a little bit. Is this really a matter of Tanai Kofel? He's telling him, I want you to get a wife for my son, Mishpachti, with Beis Avi. When he says Vim lo yitnu loch, you would think that he's over on a shavua, whether they give it or whether not. So don't we have to clarify for that reason? So as Tosfos discusses it a little bit, and one thing is, now, look, the mayor doesn't hold Miklal Hain out to Shemaya Lab, because even though it's a svara that you would say that, nevertheless, we don't say here it's a svara that he's telling him, I'm beswearing you only on Manas that they give. He would have to say, but if they don't give, you're going to be cleansed from it. In other words, you're not going to be held responsible. But according to Reb Chanina ben Gamliel, who says you have the svara, then why does he need to say that? Of course, he would be. Of course, he's innocent. He's not guilty of anything. He's not under the curse if they don't give it to him. It's not his fault. So therefore, that's why the Gemara is asking on Reb Chanina ben Gamliel. And Tosfos brings another explanation as well. He swore him two things: one, that he should get a wife from his family, and another one, that he shouldn't take from Benois Knan. So therefore, we need to state that v'nikisim shvuasi zois, you'll be cleansed of this one, but you still have the other Shavua is still in effect, and you can't take for him a wife from Benois Knan regardless. So we need to say that. So the Gemara says now, according to both of them, why does the pasuk need to continue? The Mois Soiva Isha, if the woman doesn't want to go, Lomali, why does Avraham have to mention that point as part of the Shavua? And the answer is, it's true, you need it, because you have the other way around. What if the family is willing that she should marry Yitzchak? But she doesn't want to. Maybe you should take her by force. Therefore, Avraham had to mention that detail as well, that in that case also, you need their consent, you need both her consent and her family's. And if not, then you put her from the Shavua and don't be doing anything at all. Okay, so we'll continue. The Gemara is going to continue with other examples in the Torah where we find in the Torah and in other places in Nach where we find examples like that, where there's Tanai Kofel, and why would Reb Chanina ben Gamliel, why would he say, according to Reb Chanina ben Gamliel, why would you need a Tanai Kofel if you can clearly deduce one from the other? Okay, Shukriya, everyone.